You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. My name is Joseph Toscano. This program is coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast and hundreds of podcasts on the Anarchist World This Week. In case your life doesn't have any meaning, you've got nothing else better to do, go to 3cr.org.au, 3cr.org.au. Look, I really advise you to get out in the sunshine, irrespective of where you are in Australia, be spring into the men. If you want to listen to the Anarchist World This Week, fine. If you can't, because you're enjoying the sunshine, don't forget, it is podcast. Go to 3cr.org.au. Anarchist World This Week. Anarchism without rulers. Society without rulers. Not a society without rules. It's a society without rulers. What gives the buffoons of the world the ability to determine the lives of billions of people? Inequalities in power and wealth. That's right. Inequalities in power and wealth. So the anarchist struggle is the struggle to share power, possibly through direct democratic means. It's the struggle to hold wealth in common and use it for the common good. Very simple concepts, concepts that people have been struggling for since the beginning of the human journey. You like that, the human journey? Sometimes you think we really haven't traveled that far when you look at what's happening around the world today. Now, I'm a little bit confused. Now, there's North America, there's Central America, and there's South America. All right? I'm confused. North America, Central America, South America. So, the problem is, how can you make America great again? Talk about the MAGA movement, making America great again. Should it be making the United States of America great again? Now, I thought that MAGA meant make Australia great again. That was what I thought it was. So what I'd like to do is look at three MAGA movements and have a look at the differences. Well, we all know about the United States of America, making America great again. It's the old fascist ideology. You know, ostracise and marginalise the dispossessed. Make the richer more powerful, use nationalism and racism to whip people up into some type of frenzy. We all know that. That's what making America great again is. Now, there is a MAGA movement which nobody seems to talk about, and that's the Norwegian MAGA movement. Now, I know you find that hard to believe, but in Norway, we have an almost perfect MAGA movement. It's a movement where the wealth of the country, the natural resource of the country, is used and redistributed to help the people of Norway. Now, they have lots of natural resources, mainly oil and gas, but they're very smart. And instead of allowing corporations to exploit those resources for a peppercorn rent, as we do in Australia, what they did is they set up a future fund, which now has about $3 trillion in it. And the interest from $3 trillion is enough to provide the Norwegian population with things like 46 weeks fully paid parental leave, 3 tertiary education, and the list goes on and on. Some of the best social security benefits on planet Earth. Extraordinary. Using the country's wealth to be redistributed among the citizens of that country. Obviously, it's not a perfect society. No society is perfect. But at least they had the intelligence to actually keep that wealth for the people of that sovereign nation state. Getting back to the United States of America, they say they've got a MAGA movement, Make America Great Again. But as I said before, I don't think they're interested in making Canada great again
or making Central America great again, or making South America great again. I think they're more interested in turning them into the vassal states they were post-World War II, when the United States of America did what it could to change regimes to suit its the economic benefits of its oligarchy. So what we're seeing is, you know, as I said before, the same shit, Mark One. Now, then we come to the land of milk and honey, Australia. God's chosen country. Not God's chosen people, they live in Israel. But God's chosen country, Australia. Now, we've got an opportunity to have a real MAGA movement, Make Australia Great Again, because that's what MAGA means to me. Make Australia Great Again doesn't mean, it's not Make the United States of America Great Again, because you've got to put M-U-S-A-G-A. I think that'd be a mouthful. Maybe it'd be a bit too difficult for most of those MAGA converts in the USA to actually pronounce. Who knows? So Make Australia Great Again. So how are we going to make Australia great again? Well, it's very simple. In many regards, we're very similar to Norway, but we've gone the United States way. Our resources which belong to this country's First Nations people, you know, and the rest of us boat people have turned up over the centuries. The thing is that we could have been in exactly the same situation that Norway is in today, because we have many more resources than the Norwegian people. We have coal, we have iron ore. I know it's not good having coal, iron ore, gas, uranium, bauxite, gold, diamonds, lithium, copper, magnesium, cobalt, you name it. Silver, we've got it. But what have we done? What have we done? We have said to the world, we've got all this crap here, and we wanted you to take it away. And if you take it away, we won't charge you. So what do we get in return? Peppercorn rent. Few royalties. You know, that's what we get in return. 2% of the population engaged in work with the natural extraction industry. 2% of the population. That's the working population. So, couldn't we have had a future fund? Now, I'm sure you'll tell me we do have a future fund, because I know that when telecom was privatised, some of the money that was made through the privatisation of telecom went to the future fund, but very little else has gone to that future fund. It now currently has, I think, $244 billion. So there's not enough there, really, to provide parental leave, free kindergarten, free childcare, free tertiary education. Possibly. We could have even had enough money to have a universal basic income in this country. You know, I'm sick and tired of seeing charities. I have nothing against charities, but I'm sick and tired of seeing the 32,000 registered charities in this country trying to raise money to fill the holes which can't be filled by government because of a lack of resources. We've got charities which are looking for money for cancer research, charities which are looking for money to send Australian kids to public schools, you know, charities for looking for this, charities looking for that, and we pat ourselves on the back when we give money to these charities. Now, I don't believe, no, I don't use the word belief, I don't think that we really need to have charities in a country as rich as Australia. These are things that should be financed by the government of the day. If the government of the day is not willing to actually tax those private corporations which have a stranglehold, a legal stranglehold, on extracting our natural resources from this country, then maybe we should be looking at another way. Because what's the point of having a government or successive governments of different political colours that are more than happy to, you know, let the private sector do what it likes, especially the corporate sector, the mineral extraction industry? I mean, we've got the Adani coal mine hasn't paid a dollar in tax. We have many of the gas extraction industries haven't paid a dollar in tax. We get more money from hex debts. The government gets more money from collecting hex debts on tertiary students than the petroleum resource rent tax. Extraordinary. What an extraordinary situation. As I keep saying, this isn't Bangladesh. You know, almost, 150 million people living on a floodplain. This is a continent blessed with natural resources, blessed with a minuscule population compared to the 8 billion people on the planet today. And we can't even provide for the basic necessities of the citizens and permanent residents of this country because we allow unelected, unrepresentative corporations to dominate every aspect of our existence, from grocery shopping to buying petrol or electricity or, you know, extracting natural resources and hoping against hope that the crumbs that are brushed off the corporate table in our direction, which we will fight for amongst each other, you know, is the best we can do. So we can have a MAGA movement in Australia, not a MAGA movement which is based on discrimination, which is based on marginalising and expelling minorities, but a MAGA movement which is actually based on making Australia great again by ensuring that the natural resources which are mined in this country and exported all over the world, the profits which come from those natural resources, the greatest amount of those profits go into a future fund to look after the needs of the citizens and permanent residents in this country. Think about it. When you hear about a MAGA movement, forget about those, you know, usurpers in the USA. There are actually M-U-S-A-G-A. I wouldn't know how to pronounce that. Neither do they. That's why they pronounce it. It's MAGA, as if North America, Central America, South America is all one entity. But MAGA, to me, is Make Australia Great Again. And the way we make Australia great again is to have a radical transformation in the way we live in terms of destroying the ability of corporations to maximise their profits for their major shareholders at the expense of the majority of people in this country. And if you're interested in pursuing this, you can always join public interest before corporate interests. Just go to the website, pibci.net. I'd just like to say that I'm the Secretary of Public Interest Before Corporate Interests. You can join online. Let's move on. This is the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Now, good news, or is it good news? What are we seeing? Can the world trust a buffoon and a war criminal to keep their word? And that's the key, isn't it? Trust to keep their word. Now, look, irrespective of the reservations people may have regarding the carrot that's been put out to Hamas in Gaza, and the fact is, there are, obviously, you know, I'll give you an example. There's me, there's you, and there's the little lass who lives down the road, right? There's the three of us, right? And now the little lass who lives down the road has been having a big dispute with you. So I go and see my big brother, all right? And I say, big brother, the little lass down the road needs to be taught a lesson, okay? And the big brother says to me, look, Joe, it's very simple. I'll back you. This is what we're going to tell the little lass down the road. This is the ball game. If you don't follow the rules, you don't accept our proposition, we'll come down and beat the shit out of you. All right? I mean, that's about what we're seeing. We haven't seen the Palestinians, not even the West Bank Authority, actually involved in the... We haven't seen them involved in the process in terms of forming some type of agreement. That's one thing. And secondly, it's a give or take. You accept what we tell you, or we're going to beat the shit out of you. All right? It's that simple. It's nothing complex. It's very simple. Now, obviously, the Palestinian people have suffered dreadfully over the last 2 years. And obviously, the hostages, which are held by Hamas, have suffered dreadfully, and many of them have died. Many have died as a direct consequence of Israeli actions in Gaza. So, the issue isn't what's been put forward as a temporary solution to the issue of the state of Israel, you know, marginalising the people of Palestine. The issue is, can you trust a buffoon and a war criminal to keep their word? Can you trust them to keep their word? And that's the dilemma, ultimately. Instead of having the buffoon and the war criminal telling us how it should work, and I'm not going to tell the Palestinian people what they should do. That's, you know, they're the only ones who know which way they want to go. But wouldn't it be more effective that the United Nations was involved in inserting a peacekeeping force in Gaza, not some concoction that's been proposed by a war criminal, a buffoon? So the issue is an issue of trust. It's ultimately an issue of trust. What the Palestinian people do, what Hamas does over the next few days, will obviously have a profound impact on the suffering and the humiliation and degradation of the people of Palestine, including the West Bank as well as Gaza. But the issue is, can you trust a buffoon and a war criminal to keep their word? Here they were at their little conference, talking to the world. And although the buffoon was talking about a Palestinian state, the war criminal was saying, not in my lifetime, boy, baby, not in my lifetime. So that is the central issue. Can the world trust a buffoon and a war criminal to keep their word? And that is the issue. What would happen if after the 48 hostages that are left, I think only 20 are now still surviving, are exchanged during that 72-hour period? Can we trust them to keep their word? That the Israeli state won't continue under the auspices of a war criminal and a war criminal cabinet, continue to pursue their militarism in Gaza? Think about it. This is about trust. And when you realise that the Israeli state has invaded Lebanon, Syria, has caused carnage in Yemen and Iran, and call and even attack the United States' major partner in the Middle East, Qatar, trying to destroy the negotiating team, which had been put forward by Qatar and Hamas to negotiate some type of settlement. You really have to wonder, without a neutral third party like the United Nations being able to step in militarily into Gaza and eventually into the West Bank, whether anybody can trust the word of a buffoon and the war criminal. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. Well, now, sometimes I think I'm just wasting my time here on The Anarchist World This Week. This is the 48th year I've been broadcasting in various guises, I think over 20 years on the Community Radio Network. I mean, it is a privilege. It is a privilege to be able to talk to you. I've never forgotten that. It is a privilege. But sometimes you think, why is something which is so obvious so difficult for people in authority to grasp? Now, today is a red letter day. The government has passed legislation which starts today, which means that Australians who can raise 5% of a housing that they will be able to purchase. Doesn't mean that, it just means they'll take two generations to pay off the mortgage, not one generation. You know, if they've got a 5% deposit with government help, Commonwealth government help, they'll be able to purchase. And I think, oh, that's nice. Then we've got the doomsayers, the naysayers saying all this will do is increase prices in the private housing market. And I think to myself, why doesn't anybody, even the Prime Minister of this country, who was raised by a single mother on a single mother's pension, which was introduced into this country by the Whitlam-led Labor government in 1973, before that there was only widows' pensions, there was no single mother's pensions or single father's pensions, right, who grew up in a public housing estate, who's now achieved the top office in this land, the top public office in this land, Prime Minister of Australia. Why can't he and his government, which is supposedly a reformist government, utter the word public housing? It's as if public housing, although it's a six-letter word, public, has become a four-letter word. It's the word that can't be uttered, you know? You can't be uttered. You can't utter the word public housing in any debate in this country. Obviously, on the margins, we use the term public housing, government-owned, government-managed. But everywhere else, it's about the private housing sector and the social housing sector, which is just a fancy name for a privatised public housing sector. Now, I'm going to go through this again. I know this is tedious. And unfortunately, politics, culture is about repetition. And I'll go through this again. And I'm not talking about bloody revolution, people's heads being chopped off by a guillotine, but I'm talking about simple government legislation. Now, in a capitalist society that's private investment for private profit, which we live in, okay, they talk about competition. Now, the trouble is, if there are no mechanisms by which you protect small business and small industry, as most people in small business will tell you, because there are no protections in this country, unlike many protections in many European countries. What happens is that competition dramatically decreases. And as competition decreases, costs go up and profits increase for those people providing those services. Now, the privatisation agenda, as far as the public housing is concerned, across the country, especially in the state of Victoria, but across the country, is that the public housing sector has been starved of funds in an attempt to drive people out to privatise public land for the good of the private sector. You cannot have competition in a private marketplace where there are no regulations with teeth to actually control the activities of that sector. So today in the housing sector, it is totally private driven, okay? Even I can understand this, and I'm a pretty simple person at the best of times. So you need to introduce competition into the private sector if you want to decrease housing prices. It doesn't matter what type of government intervention you have to bolster and support the private sector. If you don't introduce competition, all that support means is that we've seen taxpayers' money being used to bolster and support the private sector in the housing sector, which means increasing prices, not just in terms of cost, but in terms of rents. So how do you introduce competition in a capitalist society which is dominated, as far as the housing market, by the private sector, where you have legislation which rewards private investors for becoming involved in the housing market through negative gearing? Okay? Simple. What I'm trying to do is keep it simple, because nothing is complex. Ultimately, it's all about power and wealth. It's all about power and wealth. That's what it comes down to. So there are two ways you increase competition. You increase competition by creating a collective and cooperative sector, which is difficult because no institution is willing to lend money as starting funding for collective and cooperative sector in a capitalist society. But you do have a big stick, and that's government. So instead of government, both at the Commonwealth and state level, using taxpayers' money to fund the private sector, it's time that we went on a public housing sector rebuild effort. And it's very simple, you know. As I said, even an idiot like me can understand this. The more public-owned homes you have in the community, the less power the private housing sector has in terms of setting its own prices, because there is competition between government-owned housing, which is deposit-free housing, you don't even need 5%, and the private sector. As the competition increases, especially at the lower end of the market, because the increasing public housing build, what we would see is a drop in the value of houses at the lower end of the market, which would mean that more younger Australians could actually enter the private housing market if they wanted to, and those that can't enter the private housing market would have secure housing at an affordable cost through the public housing sector. So instead of spending billions of dollars bolstering the private sector, you could spend the same billions of dollars creating new housing. Simple. Simple. Even an idiot like me can work this out. So if I'm an idiot and I can sort this out in my own head, why can't much more intelligent people who supposedly represent us in Parliament and all these non-government organisations which are involved in the social, affordable, housing sector, kind of come to the conclusion that public housing is the way forward? So today, as far as the public housing sector is concerned, we do not see the normal people who crap on about homelessness and how difficult it is to get into the housing market open their mouth. We don't see most of the major religious institutions doing anything about it because they have become part of the problem, because they've been incorporated into this new social, affordable, community housing debacle, which is, you know, just another name for private housing. Now, this year, the Victorian State Government, considering the value of private homes, should be making about $10 billion from stamp duty alone, which people pay when they buy a home. All right? You got stamp duty. Not every, you know, first home buyers have a reduction, but, you know, everybody else upgrading, downgrading, you're paying stamp duty. Now, not 1 cent of this $10 billion is used to bolster the public housing sector. What we have is a government which is hell-bent on privatising what's left of the public housing sector. For example, its policy to destroy 44 or 48, you know, housing towers which were built in the 60s and then replace them with more housing towers which are built in 2025 or 2030, whatever. The fact is that they will all be private housing. All will be private housing. Public land will be given to the private sector. And the 10%, which is described as community, affordable, social, whatever you like to call it, housing, well, that 10%, again, will be privately owned and privately managed. What a situation we find ourselves in 2025, where we continue to beat the drum of privatisation, despite every available indicator which tells us that this is not the way that we can solve the housing crisis in this country. I mean, the irony is, as I said before, a Prime Minister who was raised by a single parent, who was able to, after the Whitlam Labor government introduced single parents benefits in 1973. Remember, before 1973, all you had was widows' pensions for single parents, and if you weren't a widow, you know, bad luck. She was able to raise Mr. Albanese in public housing. He was able to access a free tertiary education, like I was, right? And we now have a Prime Minister who loves to, you know, wander around the world telling the world what a great place we are, when the reality is that we are moving rapidly towards a corporatised model where an unelected oligarchy determine the parliamentary agenda. You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. Now, there are public housing struggles around this country, and I encourage you to find out about them and get involved in them, because the way forward is not going down this privatised pathway or the pathway of the taxpayer actually subsidising private housing developers, not just through negative gearing, but through direct grants. Here in Victoria, we do what we can. I'm the convener of Public Housing Everybody's Business. Every Thursday, between 12 and 1, we have a little vigil on the steps of the Victorian Parliament House, just to remind them that public housing is important. And the fact is, there are many organisations which are now beginning to understand the importance of public housing. Unfortunately, as I said before, we can't rely on the big organisations like the religious institutions, because they are now part of the problem, because they are part of the social community affordable housing sector. They've been bought out, as they were bought out with, you know, providing unemployment services, and the list goes on and on. So that's why. I'll talk about that in a second. Let's move on. This is The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Now, everybody tells me, you are so lucky, Joe, you can go on the program and talk about what you think is important. Well, obviously, there are legal limitations to what I can and can't say. I can't say that somebody is a greedy, you know, whatever, and name them. But, am I lucky? Or am I just a dinosaur? And is community radio dinosaur radio? Is broadcasting and podcasting, even podcasting, dinosaur radio? Why don't we see anybody in a position of authority speak up about the atrocities which are occurring in this country? Atrocities in terms of denying citizens and residents the basic necessities of life. That to me is an atrocity. In a country as rich as Australia, it's an atrocity that so many children in public education feel that it is not able to provide them with the necessities to go forward. It's an atrocity that young people who access tertiary education, one in two now access tertiary education, are saddled with a debt which can take a lifetime to pay off. It's an atrocity that housing has become a commodity, not a right. And I could go on and on. It's an atrocity that the public health sector is starved of funds. And the list goes on and on. You know why? Because the governments don't actually seem to have any power. Now, I have noticed since the buffoon, Buffalini, the United States of America, has kind of used the state to enrich himself and his mates, I have noticed there is movements that talk about standing up for democracy. So what is democracy? To me, democracy is rule of the people, by the people, for the people, by an engaged public. If the public isn't engaged, there's no democracy. If it's not for the people, there's no democracy. If it's not of the people, there's no democracy. You know, we can go on and on. Demos. Now, why is there such disgust with the democratic process? So much disgust that a buffoon gets elected as the President of the United States of America, and buffoons everywhere, you know, hold the race card, the immigration card, become heroes overnight and rule nation states. What we are seeing is the very real consequences of the failure of representative democracy. Now, democracy is like going to a restaurant, and you've got a choice. You can have this meal, that meal, all right? You can have a healthy meal, you can have an unhealthy meal, you can have an interesting meal, you can have a boring meal, but you get to choose. See, but representative democracy is a little bit different. And we've got to understand that in every nation state on the planet that calls itself democratic, we have a representative democratic system. which means whether you do it through direct first past the post voting or preferential voting or some other system, which means that you elect representatives to make decisions for you. Right? Now, if I stood on a street corner, had $100,000 in my hands and started distributing that money, I'd be considered to be either a saint or a fool, most likely a fool. Now, the trouble is, now if I stood on that same street corner, I know you wouldn't don't know what this is, but had a distributed blank checks and said to people, you know, write what you want on the check, I would be considered to be a criminal and a fool. And that's what we do. We sign a blank check when we vote. A representative says to us, or a host of representatives, I will do this or I will try to do this when I'm elected, right? Your representative gets elected. In this country, it's not a coalition of or a gaggle of independents. It's usually one of the few major political parties. And they get into parliament. One of them gets more seats than the other. And then you find that somehow all those wonderful promises they made, all the wonderful promises they didn't make, never seem to see the light of day. You see, power and wealth are interlinked. And if you have inequalities in power and wealth in society, those that pay the piper set the agenda. Now, when the Pied Piper, you know, did his little bit, you know, recruiting little kiddies for the crusade who were sold as slaves in Constantinople, I think it was the 13th century, the thing is, he or she who pays the piper calls the tune. It's very simple. Now, the beauty about broadcasting a community radio station like Community Radio 3CR through the Community Radio Network is we don't rely on private donations. We don't rely on government grants. We rely on our listeners to support this radio station, which gives me and other programs coming from Community Radio 3CR the ability to articulate their viewpoints within, you know, a legal structure which we have to follow unless we want to be, you know, lose our broadcasting license. But we have that privilege. Unfortunately, the representatives we elect to Parliament don't have that privilege. First of all, they're members of political parties. Political parties have policies. And if you don't follow that policy, you get expelled from that political party. Secondly, when the government of the day needs to make a decision regarding various aspects, they always need to keep an eye on that small section of society that owns the means of production, distribution, exchange, and communication. Because ultimately, the type of legislation which appears in Parliament is not about addressing the needs of the people of this country. It's about addressing, ultimately, the needs of that small section of society that owns the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. That's why when you wake up every morning and you go into social media or the legacy media, it's the same list of bloody problems which never seem to be addressed despite the resources that we have in this country. Childhood poverty. Poverty. 30% of Australians living on Social Security benefits. Some not even below the poverty line. 80% of Australians spending a lifetime paying off a bloody mortgage. You take out a mortgage and you pay it 20 times over, and if you're lucky, you pay it before you die, and if you're unlucky, you leave the mortgage to your kids in your will. Intergenerational mortgages to keep a bloody roof over your head. And that's all very well saying, wow, my house is now worth $1.2 million. It's a three-bedroom, you know, barn in the middle of nowhere. But if you sell that house for $1.2 million, you're going to have to find another bloody barn in the middle of nowhere. So it's irrelevant how high, unless you own multiple properties, and that's the key. Through negative gearing, you own multiple properties and make a buck. But, so that's the dilemma. Parliamentary democracy is not delivering. And it's not delivering to the citizens of countries, sovereign nation states around the world. And people ask, why isn't it delivering? I cast a ballot. My representative promised this and that. Why can't they deliver? It's a little bit like having a table full of goodies and everybody's crowded around the table and you want to get your hands on the goodies and there's all these people with guns in front of the table saying, you touch that goodie and I'll blow your hands off or your brains out. It's a similar situation. The goodies are there, but there are people protecting, and that's our parliamentary system, protecting the very people who exploit us on a daily basis. And you walk into a bank or you walk into any, you pick up a phone, please do not be abusive to our staff. Well, obviously we understand that the frontline staff have nothing to do with policies, but ultimately, policies which do not fulfil people's expectations as citizens, which do not fulfil their basic human needs, lead to the rise of movements which scapegoat and criminalise and marginalise and expel minorities. As I said before, it's a little bit like this. Corporate Australia makes a profit. Our parliamentarians rattle their little swords. Corporate Australia throws a few more crumbs amongst the Australian citizens. Ooh, we fight amongst ourselves. You know, that person with a funny hat, he's the problem. If we got rid of him, I'd get more crumbs. And then somebody says, that person with, you know, it's talking a funny language, we get him rid of her, there'll be more crumbs for the rest of us. We forget the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is they're sitting around this table brushing crumbs in our direction, trying to maintain their power and their dominance over the parliamentary legislative agenda. And that's what it is, a dominance over what can and cannot be passed through Parliament. And that's the history of the Whitlam-led Labor government is they were interested in redistributing the wealth that had been created, not in ensconcing those in power in cement so they can continue to exercise that power ad infinitum, irrespective of the harm which is done to the community as a whole. So what happens? People lose faith in a parliamentary system which doesn't deliver the basic necessities. What happens? We begin to fight amongst ourselves for the crumbs that you brushed off the corporate table, forgetting that the issue is the fact there is a corporate table and that the cake is sitting on the corporate table, and as they gorge themselves on slices of beautiful, enriched cake which has been produced by our efforts and labour, they somehow think about us when we start shaking the leg of the corporate table and throw a few more crumbs in our direction through Parliament, hoping to sate us and at the same time encouraging us to fight amongst ourselves and not see them as the issue. I mean, we think of somebody who's got a different skin colour, or somebody's got a different religious belief or no religious belief, or a different gender, or a different sexual orientation, or a different religion, or even an occupation, or a different nationality is the problem. The problem is growing inequalities in power and wealth in this country. And the way forward is not to continue fighting amongst ourselves for the crumbs. It's about time we came together and sawed. That's right. Sawed a leg off the four-legged stool on which that cake is sitting. Cake for everybody. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. Look, the purpose of this program is very simple. It's about encouraging you to become involved in activities which challenge the centralisation of power and wealth in your part of the world. The struggle isn't easy. We won't win every time. Sometimes it's one step forward and two steps backwards. But nothing happens unless people take action. Even the smallest actions can have consequences which go far beyond your time, limited time on this planet. Look at everything we take for granted today, whether it's an underfunded public health system, public education system, public infrastructure, public housing, the list goes on and on, social security benefits, holiday pay, minimum wages, health and occupational health safety rules. Everything that you take for granted when you go to bed every night is through the struggle of generations of people who no longer accept that four-year-old children should go into coal mines to maximise profits for a minuscule minority. So ultimately, change comes when people take action. And the first action you can take is get other people to open their eyes to the reality which faces them. And more importantly, it's not a matter of us fighting amongst ourselves. It's a matter of us demanding that our political representatives take our needs as their first concern, not the needs of that small section of society to maintain their extraordinary profits. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. My name is Joseph Toscano. This program is 3cr.org.au, 3cr.org.au, Anarchist World This Week. Hundreds of podcasts. I suggest you sit in the sun instead of listening to hundreds of podcasts. It's a better way to live your life. But if you've got nothing else to do, please listen to The Anarchist World This Week. But more importantly, hopefully it encourages you to become a little bit more active in your life so you can determine the type of world you want for your children and grandchildren. If you keep sitting there thinking you're a spectator, nothing changes. Things only change when you become involved in activities which challenge the power and wealth of a diminishing oligarchy which seems to be controlled almost every aspect of our existence. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. You can join public interest before corporate interests by going to pibci.net. Listen in to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station next week, courtesy of the Community Radio Network.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.